As weird as it is to say out loud, the Dodgers have already played a third of their season, 18 games in the books, just about a third, I should say. Alden Gonzalez joining us right now. He covers MLB for ESPN. Alden, good morning. How are you feeling?
How are you?
I'm fantastic. So how weird is it to be covering this sport, to be talking about baseball, and really we only have a couple of weeks worth of games and we're already basically at the one-third pole? Is it hard to kind of realize that we're already into a pennant race as it goes?
There's a lot of things that are really hard to realize. It was hard. The simple act of just sort of covering baseball and looking at the sport in a vacuum has been an incredible challenge for me because of everything else that's going on and the public health issues that are at stake because of this sport continuing on. And I mean, we have a team like the Cardinals that hasn't played in over a week that's going to finish. I mean, even if they don't have outbreaks anymore the rest of the year, they're going to play far less games than anybody else. And I've spoken to players and managers about this where, you know, you just got to at some point, and Dave Roberts touched on this recently, at some point you just got to realize that this is just going to be an atypical season and it's going to be different and you're just going to have to be okay with it because it's the only way that baseball can exist this year is it's sort of in this weird kind of fashion. And I think that's part of the reason, obviously there are monetary reasons involved with this, but that's a big reason why the playoffs were expanded because basically what Major League Baseball is telling you is, let's just have this big tournament in October, and let's have fun with that because the regular season is just going to be super weird and it's not going to be representative of anything. So it's just like, it's just an opportunity for you to watch baseball games. And so, you know, I try to sort of pick the fun in that, you know, without sort of getting too consumed by how different it is.
Alden, first of all, I miss you. I hate the fact that you left us for baseball only, but I know you still love football. But you're around baseball players and managers a lot, and you get to talk to them. So we as fans, we want to hit the panic button. We love hitting the panic button, especially when we see our favorite team, like the Dodgers, that are batting below 200 in their last eight games, I believe. How do managers and players feel when they're going through a slump like this?
Yeah. DeMarco, good to hear from you, man.
Thank you.
You know, it's I think players get like overly consumed by any little feeling where any little stretch where they're just not feeling right, and it's not necessarily with them. With hitters, it's not necessarily about results, but it's sort of about a feel. It's about just how they feel in the batter's box, how their timing is. I was speaking to Brant Brown, the Dodgers hitting coach, recently about Cody Bellinger and this feeling, and where, like, he had an MVP season last year, but he spent a lot of the second half of last year just sort of fighting himself to get back to the way he was feeling in the first half, which was when he was setting the world on fire. And that sort of translated into this season, where he sort of tweaked his mechanics, he tweaked with his setup to try to get back to the feeling that he had in the first half of 2019, which, by the way, like, there are so many, the vast majority of players will never feel as good as Cody Bellinger felt in the first half of 2019 because the numbers that he put up were crazy. But that's him. He is continually searching, and I think every hitter's like that, and that's why coaches talk all the time, and Joe Maddon said this recently. One of his favorite phrases is try easier. You know, don't put such a burden on yourself to just sort of try to find it. But having said that, in a big picture sense, and DeMarco, you touched on the Dodgers and all these guys hitting below 200. I will say this: nobody's hitting well right now. Nobody except Charlie Blackman, the Rockies outfielder, is hitting 500 for some reason.
Right.
Yeah. Besides him, nobody is hitting right now, and this was kind of to be expected for a couple of reasons. Number one is there was a quick ramp up to the season, so pitchers are traditionally ahead of hitters early on. Second part that Dave Roberts said yesterday, which I didn't really think about but might be true, is that since pitchers are not fully stretched out yet, you're seeing a lot – hitters are not really facing pitchers a third time in the same game. And usually when you face a pitcher a third time in the same game, that's when you really start adjusting to his stuff. They're seeing guys for the first time very often, and that's a lot more difficult on hitters too. So it's not just the Dodgers, you know. It's everybody. And the good thing about the Dodgers is – they're 11-7. Even though Cody Bellinger and Jock Peterson and Justin Turner and Max Muncy are obviously not who they're going to be yet.
Yeah, although with that in mind, the idea of like all the guys you just mentioned, you've got, you know, four or five regulars that are either under 200 or right about there, and they are 11-7. Is this just a testament to just how much better they are than everybody else, that half the team cannot be hitting and they're still winning a lot more than they're losing?
Yeah, that's a testament to their depth. It's a testament to their talent. I mean, I think they were leading the majors in run differential at when on Monday morning. I don't know where they are right now, but those guys are going to start clicking. I will say this. The Rockies have surprised me with the way that they've begun this season, but the Padres, they look like a legitimate threat. And I thought a lot about them when the season began, because I thought that 60-game setup might be pretty ideal for them for a couple of reasons. Number one is you have Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis Jr. in the same lineup, and it's just a 60-game season. If those guys play to their potential for that 60-game stretch, like, that's really going to show up a lot, right? And the second one is their best asset is young starting pitching, and that young starting pitching would have been severely limited and on an innings limit for a 162-game season. But when it's a 60-game season, you might be able to roll with those guys a little bit more aggressively. So you'll get, like, these guys like Chris Paddock and Mackenzie Gore, all those really talented young arms in their farm system, maybe they could pitch with fewer restrictions this year. So they're going to be a lot of fun, too. But look, guys, at the end of the day, and I keep having to remind myself because it's so atypical, but like almost every team is going to be in the playoffs. So it doesn't matter if you win your division or if you're in second, or like there are eight teams in each league making the playoffs. No matter how good your record is, the playoffs are going to start with a three-game series, and anybody could lose a three-game series. So, like, I've struggled with this too, but it's just like enjoy the baseball for this 60-game season, because it's all going to come down to like that initial three-game series in the playoffs. This season is just sort of building toward what Major League Baseball hopes is just a fun tournament in October.
Well, look, the Padres are no Dame Lillard. I will not put respect on their name just yet. Buying it, but I'm willing to listen. Oh, so what does Dave Roberts do from this point as a Dodger manager trying to get guys going? I know there's managers that have a tendency to tinker, try to shuffle their lineup, try to do anything they can to get guys going. What does he do? What can he do? What should he do, in your opinion?
He just needs to let it happen, to be honest. I mean, he was asked yesterday about the possibility of just going back to Mookie Betts being his leadoff hitter. He hasn't batted Mookie Betts' leadoff, particularly against right-handers this year, which was kind of a surprise when the season began, because Mookie was such a great leadoff hitter with the Red Sox all these years. But he didn't want to do it because he wanted to sort of divide his left and right-handed hitters so that teams can't go to the bullpen and just bring in a specialist, and then they have an advantage in back-to-back spots. It gives him more freedom with how he handles his lineup. And he was asked about just going back to Mookie Betts hitting leadoff because he's done so well. And he made the point that, look, I could put Mookie Betts at leadoff, but there are eight other guys in the lineup. And hitting Mookie Betts leadoff is not going to fix the eight other guys in the lineup. So, you know, and unfortunately for the Dodgers, a lot of guys are struggling right now. So it's not like you could just keep moving guys around. The only thing that you could hope for is that these guys are going to get going. And I'll say it again, and I really believe this. I think they are going to get going. I think what we're seeing is more just sort of broad about the league, but like, I can't fathom that Cody Bellinger's not going to hit, that Max Muncy's not going to hit, that Justin Turner's not going to hit. And I think a good thing about what you're seeing with them, at least, is they're taking their walks. They're not chasing as much. And we saw this with Anthony Rendon, the Angels' third baseman that they signed over the offseason. Anthony Rendon was really struggling. But what you ended up seeing with Rendon, though, was even while he was struggling and not getting hits, he was taking his walks, which means that he was seeing pitches. He was looking over strikes. And over these last 2 days, Anthony Rendon looks like Anthony Rendon again. So usually when good established hitters are taking pitches, they're taking their walks, usually the other part of that comes to fruition. And you'd think that that's going to happen with the Dodgers too.
Alden Gonzalez covers Major League Baseball for ESPN. And it kind of stick with the Angels here for a second, Alden. They've played a little bit better of late. They've won a couple of games in a row. Are they one of those teams where you say, you know, everybody is going to get in or close to it, or are we going to have another season where Mike Trout does not play in October?
See, that one's tough for me because they got off to such a slow start. And the the good thing for them is that the Astros are so banged up that, I mean, they're basically their entire pitching staff is composed of rookies and their bullpen has been a mess, which you saw yesterday. But the A's have already run away with the division, basically. And again, luckily for them, it's the Astros, the Rangers, the Mariners, like they're all within distance. So yeah, I keep going back to that. Everybody's going to make the playoffs, but they got off to such a slow start that it does make you worry about them a little bit. The good thing for them is that they've gotten actually some good starting pitching, even though Shohei Ohtani is not going to be able to pitch for them. Like what Dylan Bundy has given them has been amazing. Griffin Canning has looked good. Andrew Heaney has looked good. That's a team that I saw, like, similar to the Padres. I looked at the Angels as a team that they're really good for a 60-game season because while they're not a team that has the depth that the Dodgers might have, they have star talent. They have talented players at the top of their roster that need to show up. And so one thing you've seen, winning these two games against the A's has been huge for them. But through that, you saw Rendon get back to who he is. You saw Ohtani, as a hitter, really start to emerge into who he can be as a hitter. And, I mean, you look at that lineup, and I saw it, I mean, in spring training it was obvious that a lineup with Anthony Rendon and Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, and if Justin Upton could get going, I mean, that's one of the better lineups in baseball. So if they just pitch enough, like, they should be fine. And, again, they've been really fortunate that the rest of the teams in the AL West, except for the A's, have gotten off to a slow start too.
See, Trav, he's a pro. I'm reading his tweets and his articles, and lack of crowd noise doesn't bother him.
No. Alden and I go way back. We used to talk when he was covering the Angels for MLB.com, and I was over there. I know Alden knows. We're all set. Alden, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Guys, thank you so much. Pleasure. Take care.
You got it. So that's good news. If you're an Angel fan, to hear Alden say it, that they can crawl back into it. But this was the concern, right, for all these teams, DeMarco. If you get off to a bad start in a 60-game season, you can get buried in a week and change, and there's just not enough time to dig out of it. And the Angels are trying, but it's going to be close because the A's are running away with it, and they're still not in that top two spot. Yeah. Not far out of that second spot, but we'll see. That pitching's got to hold up. All right. We had a problem with Dame Lillard before. Wait till I give you some of these numbers, DeMarco. The Lakers should be very, very concerned about this guy. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. Woo, woo! Good Wednesday, everybody. And DeMarco, I got to tell you, I am watching these Damian Lillard highlights all over again on TV in front of me right now. I do not need that man to be a part of my life in another week or so. I would very much like him to just go away. He is a really scary dude. Yeah.
Big time. You know, there are a lot of people out there on that list right now. I want you to go away forever, please.
Yeah, it's not a short list, but man, if I'm a Laker fan, and I am, he makes my blood run cold. They just showed a whole bunch of super highlight rip of him just knocking down 30-footer after 30-footer. 61 last night. He joins Wilt Chamberlain as only the second player ever to score 60 or more points three different times in his career. Just crazy. Just a phenomenal player.
It's always those guys that poke the bear or they awaken the sleeping dragon. And I used to say this to guys that would had to block Bryant Young. Or Warren Sapp, you know, whatever you do, if you have a good play against them, just don't say anything. Because if he's asleep, good. If you wake him up, it's bad for everybody.
Yeah, no, there's no winning. Like, the win against Damian Lillard is to not make eye contact with him, hope he misses his 30-footers, and just keep it moving. Because if you alienate the man.
Yeah. I would compliment him to death. Great shot, man. That's awesome. Great stuff.
You look good tonight,
man. I would try to kill him with kindness. Absolutely. Kill him with kindness.
You're hot. Man, you ever miss? Wow. Yeah. All right. So we know that we're getting close to playoff time. We're going to have the whole playoff field set by at the latest Sunday afternoon when the Western Conference finishes their playoff game, if it doesn't happen on Saturday. According to a memo that has been circulated, Adrian Wojnarowski on his Twitter feed, Wode is just saying that players will be allowed to bring in family and, quote, established longtime personal friends into the bubble. So they're going to be able to kind of break up some of the monotony. They're going to be able to bring some people into the bubble. Now, it goes on to say, here's who isn't eligible to come into the bubble as a guest per the memo. Quote, any individual the player has not previously met in person or with whom the player has had limited in-person interactions. For example, here it comes. For example, known by the player only through social media or an intermediary. Sorry, ladies, it's not happening for you. I get what that, because that is a very specific, no Instagram models in the bubble.
Because so James, we all know Harden what we're talking instantly about. Upset.
Exactly.
James Harden is instantly mad. Well, I mean, you got to do something. I mean, look, if you're upset by that, then I don't know what to tell you, but you got to keep everybody safe. But I like the fact that you're bringing families into the bubble. Think about that, man. If you got to go away for what, 4 weeks, a month, and you can't go see your family, you can't hug your kids, that would be a nightmare. But the only people that have a problem is they can't date during the playoffs. I'm sorry.
You have a very nice interpretation of the word date, DeMarco.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was going to use a different four-letter word, but that's just me. I mean, that's
right.
We'll see. It also goes on to say, among those also not allowed as player guests per memo, current prospective staff or business relationships, including agents, trainers, managers, physical therapists, personal chefs, and tattoo artists. So you can't get a new tat inside the bubble. You're gonna have to wait till your team is eliminated or you win the title.
I hope these guys are tough. I do. I mean, I know a lot of guys, it takes a lot for some of these guys to get on the court, and they play well, don't get me wrong, they're doing a great job, they're fantastic, they're great basketball players, but you know, I hope some of these guys can function without all the high-end luxuries they're used
to. Yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of an interesting deal, because let's back up a little bit here. This is a perfect example of leadership. This is a perfect example of having a boss at the top who's seeing the problems as they're coming down the track, right? Who's seeing a way to try to make their players or their constituents more happy. What we're seeing right here is Adam Silver is looking at this and saying, look, we've had these guys in there for about a month already. Guys are probably getting a little twitchy. Frank Vogel was talking about that. They're spending so much time around their teammates that it's kind of getting weird. I don't know about you, but if you're with the same people day after day after day, eventually you're just like, dude, just get away from me. I just need a break from this. So Adam Silver's looking at this saying, hey, look, let's bring in some family members. Let's bring in some people to make this a little more palatable for the guys that are going to be in here. Because look, hopefully the Lakers have another 2 months in that bubble. The Clippers have another 2 months in that bubble. So having just some of the creature comforts of home, getting to see some familiar faces, getting, whether it's your kid or your girlfriend or your wife or your best friend or whatever it might be, this is good leadership from Adam Silver in the NBA. It's just another example of this guy kind of being a step ahead of everybody else.
It's smart. I mean, think about it. The only reason you would ever break curfew, if you, even LeBron James, let's say, and he's dedicated to winning more so than anyone else in the NBA. I think that's fair to say, right? Mm-hmm. He's the guy top of the heap competitive-wise. The only reason he would break protocol is probably because of his family. I've got to go see them. I've got an issue at home. I've got to go. So why not bring them to him? Make that a part of the bubble. It's smart. So, and another thing on another note, I know the NFL at some point is going to move on from Roger Goodell. And as a matter of fact, Kevin Warren is a guy that name has been bandied about as the next commissioner of the NFL. So moving to Adam Silver, the NBA knocked it out of the park 100% with that guy. So I hope any sport or league that's thinking about changing ownership, that would be a guy I would contact or try to model my next commissioner after, no doubt.
What makes a good commissioner? Because here's the rub. Adam Silver obviously is very, very bright. And Adam Silver is obviously a guy that has worked in a variety of different levels of the NBA and NBA entertainment and front on all these different things. But his role as commissioner, he's been partners with his players. That while the commissioner works for the owners, right? The owners are the ones that decide who's going to have that job. They pay him, and that's how that goes. Adam Silver has had a very healthy relationship with his players, and I think he got off to a really good start when Donald Sterling did what he did, his despicable act, and he very quickly said, no, we're not having that. We're going to get his ass out of here, and he did it. And it happened, in the grand scheme of things, pretty damn fast. And so the players are looking at it saying, okay, that we've seen the players through all the social protests that we've been going through for the last couple of months be a partner in saying, how can we help you get your message out there? It's been good. the other leagues have taken a very adversary. I don't think that any NFL player would look at Roger Goodell as their partner. They look at him as the boss. They look at him as a guy that can really mess with their life if he wants to, but I don't think they look at him as a partner. Are you looking at for a partner? Are you looking for somebody that's a collaborator? Or are you looking for somebody as an owner that's just going to make sure we get the best TV deal, that we don't have to play the payers as much as we might have to, that we're getting the best collective bargaining agreement? What are you looking for?
You don't have to be a player's coach. Like, you know, Jeff Fisher was definitely a player's coach to the detriment of the team sometimes. But you at least have to get your players. You have to understand your players. And I, you know, Roger Goodell, I mean, his image has started to soften with the players over the last 12 months, starting with the draft, or reaching its crescendo with the draft when you actually saw the real guy, you know, when he was in his basement. So he's just like us. But before that, he was a guy in a suit that was the bad guy. When you saw him, something bad was happening. But it's a little bit different. But it seems like Adam Silver, to his credit, he understands the players, their needs, their wants, and he listens to them. I think any sport like the NFL would do wonders. It would do great to kind of model your next commissioner after that guy. At least have a guy that understands what it's like to be in the helmet, to come out of a game and feel bad on Monday, to always have your life dictated to you versus not having a voice. So, and how frustrating that would be. I love how the NBA does things. I know NFL players are envious of the way the players get to voice their opinions on a lot of things and how things change when they wanted to and when they needed to. That sort of mentality would be great in the National Football League. So I think the way he's handled things, the bubble, the way they've handled COVID, the way they have brought the sport back to the mainstream safely, I think that's great. I think it's exemplary, and I think that should be the way sports should go as far as the commissioner is concerned.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. I've never wanted to be wrong about something so much in my life than what I'm about to say. But let's say baseball just spits the bit and they can't finish. Let's say that football tries to start and they just can't because guys are getting infected and testing positive and they can't go. They get through a month or so and they say, no, this just isn't going to happen. How brilliant is Adam Silver going to look? Because baseball had an opportunity to bubble and chose not to. The logistics of bubbling football are really difficult, and I understand that just because of the sheer numbers of it. But you could try. I think there's a bit of a misnomer here that the bubble has to be like the NBA bubble, one spot. Well, hockey's bubbling. They're doing it in two spots. You could bubble. There's 32 teams. Have 16 bubbles or eight bubbles. Do one for every division and kind of make it set up like that. So there are other opportunities. But if the only sports that get to the finish line, the NBA and the NHL, are the ones that bubble and everyone else decided, we'll be okay without one, they're going to look like idiots.
No doubt. But I always thought that the NBA, you know, with Silver and the players, it's like, look, I'm going to do this, but we have to do it together. So if I'm going to allow this, you have to be smart about what you're doing. You can't be Lou Williams, just to use his name.
He was just going to get something to eat, DeMarco. Don't make it weird.
Right. And I thought, and Hooters is an out.
Uh-huh. Right.
Right. Right. I read Playboy for the articles. Of course, I get it. But no. But we have to be smart. It's a partnership. We have to be in lockstep. So if we do this, we have to do it together, which means I'm going to open it up, but you have to be smart. So I think that's a similar approach that the NFL is under right now. It's more, you know, coaches and teams to their own players, but I think the commissioner is a part of that. So, look, if we're going to do this, we have to be smart. We're going to do it as safely as we can, keep you guys safe here. But when you leave the building, leave the facility, you have to be just as smart. Because, look, if somebody tests positive and we start and have to stop, we're all going to look bad. We're all going to lose money. We're all going to miss out on what we want to do best on game day, which is play. So just having an owner that at least has some sort of or a line of communication with his players versus dictating to, I think, is always the best option.
All right, Alden Gonzalez covers MLB for ESPN. We'll get into the Dodgers and where their bats went with him next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. Yeah, I see you trying to get sneaky in your house, DeMarco. I hear those microwave buttons being poked. I hear that door closing and latching shut.
Why would you out me, man? Why would you out me like that? I'm trying to be cool.
What are you making?
Actually, I'm making breakfast sausages. The maple variety. We're going to defrost them real quick. Yeah.
We're going to have some eggs on the side with those things. Like, what are we talking? Eggs, pancakes? What else are we putting with those sausages?
I'm going to throw some eggs on there. You know, I'm going to, you know, have a little breakfast. Come on. Oatmeal.
Oh, now we're going big. We're going big. Yeah. What, Jorge, what is it? A 2-2-2, 2-egg, 2-bacon, 2-pancake?
2-2-2, 2-egg, 2-pancake, 2-bacon, my friend.
There you go. See?
Double that and you got mine.
Yo, fo, fo, fo. It's the Moses
Malone. That's right.
Right? Yeah. Absolutely. Right. All right. So we've been talking about Dame Lillard this morning. Here's what we're talking about. Here's the Lakers and the Blazers in the bubble so far. The Lakers have won 3, lost 4. Portland's 5-2. The Lakers are a league worst 104.1 points per game. The Blazers, let me say the Lakers again. The Lakers are averaging 104 points a game in the bubble. Portland's averaging 125. Okay. Yeah. 104 to 125. They're giving up. The Lakers are giving up 110. The Blazers are giving up 122. So that's a good one for the Lakers. 3-point shooting. Portland's shooting 43%, which is just otherworldly hot. The Lakers are shooting 28%, which is way below league average. In fact, it's the worst in the entire bubble. So the Lakers are the number one seed. The Lakers have LeBron. The Lakers have AD. The Lakers have a bunch of guys on that team with championship pedigree that have been in the finals before, whether it's JaVale or Quinn Cook or Danny Green, J.R. Smith, LeBron. All these guys have been through it before. Portland's got a problem, man. They score a ton of points. Their backcourt scores a ton of points, and the Lakers are not scoring on their own. This is not just a 1-8. This is more like a 1-2, which feels like it could go either way.
Well, you know, all the guys you mentioned for the Lakers and the scoring, and the first guy that jumped to mind was the Lakers have Frank Vogel. Isn't his ballywick defensive basketball? Mm-hmm. Defense is his thing. So I'm hoping, and even he said it, you know, we're sacrificing defense to, you know, put more emphasis on the offensive end. That's why they went through that slump, in my opinion. So I bet he's going to have a plan or has a plan for how to contain Portland or guys like Dame Lillard. So it's going to be a team effort, no doubt. There's not going to be one guy the Lakers have that you can trot out and say, stop him or, you know, hold him down. That's not going to happen. The guy can shoot from half court or beyond if need be. So it'll be a defensive effort. Rebounding is going to be big. You know this. So make him shoot tough shots. Be physical if you can and, you know, hope he doesn't win it from the free throw line. But Frank Vogel is the first guy I think about when you're facing these hot shooting teams or these teams with these hot guards that can shoot from anywhere.
Look, Frank Vogel is a defensive-oriented coach. You're right about that. But I was watching the Mavs and the Blazers last night. And, you know, they do those little interviews with the coaches when you come back from commercial break. And they interviewed Rick Carlisle, who is another guy that is a defensive-oriented, tough coach, a championship-winning coach. He's been through it a long time. This is a guy that is thought of as one of the better coaches in the league. And the question was asked, hey, what are you going to do with Dame tonight? You know, and he said, I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know. And they were talking about, I think it was Stan Van Gundy who was on the telecast last night. And he said, he goes, look, if there was a way to deal with this man, he wouldn't be Dame Lillard. If there was an answer to what he's doing, then we wouldn't know who he is. There are no answers for this. You just do the very best you can. What you were talking about a little while ago, you try to deal with everybody else because you make it hard on him. You make him work for everything he gets, but there is no answer for that. You just got to hope that your guys are a little better on any given night because we saw, you know, if there was an answer, Rick Carlisle wouldn't have given up 61 points to one guy. And that's exactly what happened.
No doubt. You're going to have to make them work on the other end. That's number one. I don't think you can get into a shootout with them, even with LeBron. I mean, even with LeBron James, you're still in it. If he has to go and carry the load and be the guy and be Superman that night and really match him shot for shot, I still feel confident in LeBron James. But at some point, you're going to have to lock down defensively, at least recognize what they're doing and come up with an answer. Be ready with your subs, and everybody's going to have to be on the same page because, like you said, this guy could score 60. Now, he could negate a great game. He might be the only guy, well, there might be a few, but one of four or five guys in the NBA that could actually negate what LeBron does. Even if he's playing well, this guy could absolutely just light it up and negate that and make the game close or tough. But Frank Vogel's going to have to come up with something. I don't know is not an acceptable answer, in my opinion. you better come up with something, be physical, what have you. I don't know. Try to, you know, bump him off his game, lock him in the bathroom, something. But he's hot right now, and you're going to have to figure out some way to kind of keep a lid on him just to stay in it to win this.
Who were some of the guys that when you were playing or when you've seen this version of the Rams play where you just like, you know what? I don't know what we're going to do. We're going to try to find something, but there just really isn't an answer for a blank. You mentioned Barry Sanders the other day.
That was personal because of what he does. He'll just shake you. I mean, it wasn't real complicated what they were doing with him. It was just him. I mean, he could take a front side play, break it backside, and then bring it all the way back around and make eight guys miss and score or pick up a first down. But the guy that when they broke the huddle, when he left the huddle, the only guy that I could ever remember that we don't have a guy to cover or run with him or do anything is Randy Moss. You know, that he's just a freak. No matter what happens, where he goes, where he lines up, we're in trouble, really. Even if we have what we call star coverage to that side, we've got two guys, one in front, one behind, and somebody lurking underneath. We still have problems covering him up because of how good he is. He's just a freak. So I think Dame Lillard, right now, the way he's playing, he's at an emotional high. You know, he's playing beyond himself, and he's good to boot. It's kind of that same thing, man. Whoever is in front of him, you can't get down on yourself if he drops 30 on you in a quarter. He's going to do that to anybody. Like you said, Barry Bonds the other day. You know, why would a pitcher get upset if Barry Bonds hits a home run? He's done that to 70 guys before you. Just line up and do it again.
Right. Yeah, it's not personal at that point. You're just next. Yeah. You just happen to be your turn to get. And this, I think what you just described is exactly why I'm so worried about Portland. That while Devin Booker is a great player, he doesn't fill me with that there is no answer for this guy. While Ja Morant is going to be a really good NBA player, I'm not worried about Ja Morant. I'm not worried about Frank Vogel and these guys looking around like, I don't know what to do with that. They'll figure it out. Dame?
Yeah, Michael Thompson helped me with that yesterday. Yeah, Michael Thompson helped me with that when we had him on, when he said, look, they're too young. I mean, they won't have the guts to look the Lakers in the eye. Now, they're good. Booker's good. He's worth the price of admission, no doubt. He can fill it up with the best. But, you know, he's right. There's a veteran squad coming one way, and there's a young group coming the other way that is still trying to learn the game. So that makes sense. Portland is a different animal. Like you said, they've got some vets. They've got Dame Lillard. They've got the attitude, and they've got the will to knock you out of the postseason. So they're a scary matchup. This is the last team you want to see in the playoffs right now, especially in the first round.
Well, this is what's so crazy, right? That if the season were more traditional in the sense that Damian Lillard doesn't get hurt, he just plays his regular season, and Portland ends up, let's say they're the second or third seed, right? Which is not at all a stretch. That's probably where they would have landed. Because keep in mind, they were in the Western Conference Finals a year ago. And you were going into the Western Conference Finals against the Portland Trailblazers. It wouldn't be everything's going to be fine. We've got LeBron. It would be we got a problem. The way that this guy's playing, the way that he's been cooking, there is no answer. Because if you press him, he goes right past you. If you give him any sort of room, that ball's gone. I don't care if it's 40 feet. He's letting it go, and he's making about half of them at this point. So there is no option. Because it's an 8 seed, you're like, they'll be okay. This is not an 8 seeded team. This is a 2 or a 3 that happens to be an 8 that got in because the season got postponed for 4 months because their guy got healthy. This is not a 1-8. You got to look at this as a 1-2 because that's the sort of talent they're bringing to the game.
You played softball, right? You ever played in the beer league softball?
Yeah. Sure.
And there's a lot of stuff that goes on in those leagues, and you face the A seed or the lowest seed team in the postseason in the playoffs, and it's loaded with ringers. Wait a minute.
Right.
You guys are the A seed? No. No. That's what you're getting with Portland. You're getting the championship caliber squad that it looks like any A seed looks like they limped in, but no, this team is good enough to beat everybody in the West and absolutely represent the West in the NBA Finals. So, I mean, this is the team you wanted to avoid, but look, you got every confidence. You got LeBron. You've got AD. You've got a lot of weapons here. So, but the thing that scares me the most is all the pressure's on the Lakers. It's not on Portland.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, if the Lakers beat Portland, they're supposed to. But so just imagine how that feels. Thinking about it, if he evens the series, or if they go up one or two games. Imagine the pressure and imagine the talking heads then, and imagine how Dame Lillard is going to perform if he's got a lead on you. That is really scary.
Good luck. Good luck. Go Phoenix, go San Antonio, go Memphis, anybody but this dude. I just do not want him to be what we deal with next. All right. It's football season. How do I know? Because Hard Knocks made its debut last night, and Anthony Lynn made a surprise announcement. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. It is football season, DeMarco. We know that because Hard Knocks is here, and we found out last night that Anthony Lynn is now on what is a growing list of NFL head coaches that have tested positive for COVID. He made the announcement that, he was talking about his team and how serious this all is. And, hey, I had it earlier. He did not have any serious symptoms. But, you know, if we're all just going through this and trying to deal with this in our everyday lives, and guys are getting it, they're trying to do their best, and they're catching it and spreading it, and that's just the way that this thing works. I'm trying to remain as optimistic as possibility about the football season, but I just think it's going to be so difficult to do this just because of the nature of football. You know, baseball, we've seen a couple of different outbreaks, and guys aren't leaning on each other in baseball the way they are in football. Do you think that we're going to get to a point where whether we're having teams that are shut down or the whole league shut down, or is it just going to be kind of, hey, look, next man up in just the ultimate and most extreme way possible?
Well, it could happen, but the one thing that gives me encouragement is hockey. That's the one sport that closely resembles football in its contact. It's a collision sport, contact sport. You spend a lot of time with each other in close quarters, and it's not about social distancing. It's about the opposite, closing the distance. But they haven't had a positive test in weeks or months, so it is possible. And when Coach Lynn said that on Hard Knocks, I was shocked. Joey Bosa's eyes, mine too. Like, wow, what a stunning admission. And the fact that we didn't hear about this until the show was also like, wow, that's amazing. But the one question I would have had was how, where, do you know when, what did you do? What were you doing? You know, so maybe it's something that I don't want to say he did wrong, but maybe it's something that he took a risk and it turned out to bite him. Maybe he had a family member, but just how? That's the answer I didn't get. But yeah, I mean, it could happen just like the Florida Marlins. There could be one player that goes out and gets chicken wings at a strip club. Excuse me. He was just there for the food, and right. He brings it into the locker room and it spreads. That is a possibility. But, you know, when your head coach says it is possible, guys, take this seriously. I just had it, or I was infected too. That does have a way of resonating with the players. I'm sure it's resonated with the rest of the league and the people that saw it.
You mentioned this a few times, about Sean McVay specifically, that coaches, I think, just generally speaking, are pretty adaptable guys, that they don't like variables, they don't like unknowns, they don't like distractions. I mean, how many times have you heard a coach say, you know, well, we're trying to eliminate distractions, we're trying to worry about this, whether it's an off-field incident or a contract situation or whatever it might be. They don't like that stuff, but they also know that it's inevitable that they're going to have to deal with it. And it feels like the Rams with Sean McVay are probably as well equipped. That dude just seems so eminently adaptable to things, that his focus is so singular that, to use your line, if he has the coach hanging from the ceiling by his shoes, he'll figure out a way to do it. So if he gets sick, or one of his staffers gets sick, or whoever it might be, or even just not sick, but maybe positive and asymptomatic, they'll find a way through it. It'll be weird. It'll be a really interesting, because we talked about it during Take It or Shake It. There's going to be games where a team's playing and their head coach is not on the sidelines. They're going to be in quarantine, no doubt. And it's going to happen. And it just feels to me like Sean McVay is one of those guys that's going to have all of that stuff figured out before it happens.
Well, it's amazing. And I'll just take a second to crow about this staff, this group, and Sean McVay's leadership and what the Rams have had to do the last couple of seasons, how far they've traveled, where they had to go, and his record throughout all of that has been exemplary. I mean, there's a plan in place. They have contingency plans in place just in case this happens. So for the players, for all involved, even if something happens, it'll feel like it's normal. They've already prepared for it. So that's the benefit of having a guy like that. But have you ever heard this in football? Guys have used this. Maybe Key has. It's called move the drill.
Move it up 10 yards.
move it up 10 yards. There's a guy out there. He's bleeding from the nose, his ears, and he's twitching. And it seems cold, but the head coach will take one look and say, move it up 10 yards, keep going.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Look, we're out here to work. We have the right people to worry about him. You focus on your job of getting ready to play whatever opponent. So I've even had coaches. This was so funny. When we opened that new facility, there was a leak to where, like, it was a sewage leak, and it was the most god-awful smell, and water had come in, and it was hitting us in the feet, and all of us were looking down, and without missing a beat, the coach just said, you know, the hell with it, focus on what you're doing. And he's standing in this crud, and it smells so bad, and we didn't miss a rep. Like, forget about it, move on. Like, it was almost as if we did this on purpose to test your focus. Now let's move on and practice. So I think that stuff is necessary. It's beneficial, but I think that's the mentality you're going to have this year when everything's going to be new.
The question will be, like, to your point, if you know, we're doing a drill with my offensive line and guy blows out his knee, move it up 10 yards. We got another move guy that will 10. Slide right in there. I get it. But if your whole offensive line is sent home because they have to quarantine for 2 weeks, that's a little different. You're right. You know, I can replace my left tackle. I can replace my right guard. But if all five of these guys are gone, I don't know what – I mean, at that point, what do you do? Because an individual here and there, next man up, move it up 10 yards. But my entire offensive line is tested positive. Now what?
Well, be safe. Did you see the testing protocols and what these guys have to do just to get in the door? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if there's anyone that's positive or their temperature is elevated, they will be removed. So, you know, they'll keep it to one guy if they can. But like you said, if there's an outbreak and there's 19 guys and it's all one group, you may have to call the league and say, hey, look, we just can't field a football team this week. And then they'll go from there. But what they're doing is they're trying their best to limit the exposure from everyone else in the building. And I love what the Rams call it. It's an ecosystem. That's exactly what it is. You're going to have to maintain the ecosystem of the facility so that we can keep playing on Sunday.
You know, and maintain the ecosystem, however you want to phrase it, the Saints, the Cowboys, they're basically creating their own bubble. And I wonder if every team shouldn't do the exact same thing, because even if I'm trying my hardest, right, to do the right thing, to socially distance, to wear my mask, to not go anywhere that isn't necessary, if I'm going in and out of my home and I have kids, or I have a girlfriend or a wife or a boyfriend, whatever it might be, and I'm going in and out and they're going in and out, I can be as careful as I want. I'm increasing the likelihood that this happens. The reason the NBA is just going along, the reason that the NHL is just going along, is nobody's coming in or out. These guys go back to their hotel room. They do whatever they do in the hotel room. They go back to the practice. They're not leaving. Just the baseball, they're not bubbled. Football,
no doubt.
They're not
bubbled.
You're
going to have to be smart. You're going to have to be your veterans are going to have to really, really, you know, take ownership of this and be smart and be leaders, man. I mean, you can't preach one thing and then do another, because, like you said, this is dire. And this is another thing. I remember we used to get guys from other teams that would come in, and they were shocked that we can walk in and out of the equipment room and grab whatever we want. You couldn't do that in Cincinnati? Oh, hell no. They had it behind bars. So I hope there's not some owner, some cheapskate owner out there in the NFL that's not going to go overboard with security or safety measures. Like, spend whatever you need to keep your coaches and players safe. Don't skimp on this. Spend whatever you have to. If you don't have the money, borrow it. But it's important that everyone stays safe in this situation.
Fingers crossed for sure. College football is not going to take the risk. A couple of Power 5 conferences have pulled the plug. And what does that mean for spring football? We'll tell you next. That's coming up on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.